The Streets Don't Love You Back radio show started in 2009 by Rob and Lucinda, and it is still currently going on really strong. If you would like to be a guest on the show, advertise any brand or product that you have, or get your music played, you can contact us at our website at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.com. That's www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.com. And thanks again for your continued support. We do appreciate it.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show worldwide. First of all, we got a great, great guest. We want to say thank you to our homeboy, Leon Benson, for coming on the show. We want to give him his flowers for a living. Leon spent 25 years in prison, convicted on a wrongfully charge. Leon would tell his story. And we're going to bring Leon on without further ado. What's up, my main man, Leon Benson?
Hey, man, how you doing, big bro?
Hey, man, everything's good, man. We're going to get straight into this thing for these people, man. Go ahead and state your name again for the show and break it down to the people, your story.
Hey, definitely. You know, my name is Leon Benson. You know, also a.k.a. L. Bentley 448, my hip-hop handle. A lot of the comrades just call me 448. So, you know, I'm newly exonerated. This is day 94 that I've been exonerated, man, after 25 years of wrongful incarceration. And it's been a hell of a battle. You know, I'm here, and I'm back for everything I deserve. In a little bit more.
My man, glad to hear that, 448. So we're going to run this thing all the way back, man. Let the people know, man, how that wrongly convicted thing jumped off, man.
You know, definitely, man. You know, back in the days in the 90s, man, you know, I'm from Flint, Michigan. I'm from the D. I lived in the D, too. And the way we came up, you know, hustling. So, you know, I stopped hustling. I thought it was gone out of me, man. I moved to Indiana and I got a job. I wasn't trying to get back in the game, but I ended up getting back in the game. And so I was down in Indianapolis, Indiana, Naptown, stand up. You know, I got a lot of love, you know, for Indianapolis, not so much for they police. And you see why they set me up. So it was an individual by the name of Casey Shone who was murdered 1998, cold-blooded, like on the street corner. You know, I didn't sell drugs on the street corner. You know, we was more advanced, you know, sadly, you know, in selling drugs, you know, in the D. Not on the street corner. You know, you just ring my pager, you know. And, you know, I'll reach out to you, meet you somewhere, come deliver to your house, you know, behind closed corridors, you know, just something just a little more business savvy than be on the corner. But, you know, somebody on the corner, you know, murdered Casey Shone. Casey Shone happened to be a white middle-class male. He was 23 years old. I never met Casey Shone. I never knew him. But because my name was buzzing in the area and I was wearing the handle at that time of Detroit. And, as a young man, you know, at the age of 22, you know, I wasn't really versed in my history about how important the city of Detroit was. You know, Detroit represents unforgivable blackness for a lot of parts of America, you know, particularly the racist sect of America, because, you know, Detroit was once the mecca of, you know, a black utopia where people migrated from down south, came up to Detroit, and they had a better shot at life, you know. Henry Ford, you know, he allowed, you know, African Americans to come and work, General Motors. They did their thing. And that helped it thrive. And you got things like Motown and other things that was going. But, you know, unfortunately, after the 67 riots, you know, white flight happened, as well as, you know, just blight. And you call this Rust Belt community. Rust Belt communities are communities that were abandoned by factories. And when the factories abandon a community, that first strike of unemployment is devastating. So people start to resort to different things to make a living. And unfortunately, you know, back then it was heroin. And then we know the war on drugs, the so-called war on drugs, or the war on, you know, people of color. We know about the crack epidemic that ushered in. And, you know, Michigan was one of the first states with the mandatory minimum, too, like as early as, like, 78, you know. And, you know, it was really crazy. So my thing is, I didn't know all this stuff came with Detroit. So with me having a handle of Detroit, you know, I believe that the lead detective, Alan Jones, made me a target, and he set me up, you know, for a murder that I didn't commit, even though he had way more evidence that another individual committed the crime.
Wow, that's powerful, brother. You feel me? And let the viewers know, what day did you get exonerated, and when did you step out that gate, man?
Okay. You know, sadly, you know, I was wrongfully arrested August 14th, 1998. Then I was in the second trial. I was found guilty in July of 1999. And I sat in prison for nearly 25 years. And I was exonerated March 9th of 2023. One of the best days of my life.
My man, now when you stepped out that gate, 448, the world and the viewers know, man, what was that feeling like, man, to be free as a human being, as a man?
Hey, how I can make an analogy, I make it analogous to like a rebirth. Because as I'm coming about the darkness of prison, you know, when they finally open up, you know, the guards, they was gloom and doom. They was mad, you know, that I was walking out of there for somebody new. I don't know why, but they were. So it was a lot of darkness in that place. You know, as I come out and the doors open, I was being reborn. I seen the air, the sun shined on my face. I was blinded. And I seen people, you know, at the end of this life. I was walking with my queen sister, Valerie Buford. This is my biological sister. She been with me for many, many, many years, right? I liken her to Miriam that was with Moses, right? You know, hey, we finally won. She had the tangerine, so to speak, right? You know, clapping and dapping and doing her thing. So we was walking out there together, and I seen other people at the end of the walk, and I couldn't really make out the images, but I started to, and the thing that I was greeted by, a crowd of people saying, truth never dies, truth never dies. And just by me hearing my own mantra echo back to me, I knew I was finna go into the arms of loved ones, you know?
My man. Now, let's touch up on this right here, 448. When the people that start working on your case for you in San Francisco, let's go on that right quick. Once they start working on your case and you start communicating with them and you started seeing light at the end of that tunnel, how was that feeling was right there?
Hey, it was an incredible feeling. You know, a lot of people don't know, and my struggle, I really exhausted all my remedies. So you got to think how I felt as early as 2018, I exhausted my remedies because I filed my post-conviction relief appeal late because it was a lawyer, a rogue lawyer that got on my case without my permission, and I went through the courts fighting them in civil litigation. I was unsuccessful, and it cost me a whole year, and this forfeited my anti-death penalty time, and I could not just file a regular habeas corpus in the federal courts after all my state appeals were exhausted. I needed to file an actual innocence, and I was working on doing that. You know, it's a particular thing for people that are in the legal community. They understand what I'm saying. And, you know, I wouldn't out the fight, but I was fighting, you know, from the hole. I was pretty much accepting that I was going to be, you know, in prison for at least until, you know, 2027. You know, I did my due diligence with, you know, building myself while I was in there, you know, programming, things like that, got time cuts. But long story short, from a long shot, I filed a clemency. And while I filed this clemency, I put out a blog and I was seeking, you know, letters of support, you know, for my supporter base that was on Free Leon Benson Facebook page, cause page. And I got like 21 responses. Now, the irony of this is that out of those 21 responses, I only knew 5 people. This is, you know, really odd for me from, you know, campaigning and fighting, you know, all through the years. You know, usually it'd be your regular supporters that really do it, but I only got like 5 people out of 21. And one of those people was a woman by the name of Shannon Coleman. Shannon Coleman was from Philadelphia, and she wrote in her letter, you know, passionately, you know, as an African-American mother of 2, and somebody who had helped another individual to exoneration by the name of Anthony Wright, Pennsylvania. And she really advocated for me, you know, to the clemency board. And I was very moved by that. And I wrote Ms. Coleman about that. And, you know, she responded to me, hey, what can I do? And we ensued with a correspondence through letter, you know, email, my phone. And this was 2020, you know, between July 2020 and, you know, November. And, you know, long story short, you know, Shannon, with her unique networks from exonerating another young man, she was able to, you know, get my case on the table of the Conviction Integrity Unit in Marion County, Indianapolis, Indiana. And this was the first time that they had a CIU there, so that was very paramount. And I received a questionnaire as early as February. You know, I filled it out reluctantly because, you know, I didn't wrote every innocent project in the world, it seemed like. And I just looked like I was going through the same process, but I did it anyway. And by July, the Conviction Integrity Unit, led by Kelly Bowder, they accepted my case under investigation. And as fate would have it, because of Ms. Coleman's connection with the liberation community, she connected me to an outstanding attorney by the name of Laura Bazelon from the San Francisco School of Law, also the director of the Racial Justice Clinic in San Francisco, California. And because of their relationship, Laura got my case and heard from Shannon, and like a week later, she took my case. And so my case is on that table, and, you know, the rest is history. But the thing about this particular group, it was a diverse group of people, you know, law students, ex-attorneys, a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant private investigator by the name of Eric. He did a wonderful job locating witnesses and things like that. It was boots on the ground. They flew, you know, from California and came down to Indianapolis and, you know, in Canvas, you know, the city. And, you know, one of the big things that they found that was very remarkable was the lead detective had confessed to withholding, you know, crucial evidence that somebody else committed the crime. And he confessed to them, you know, in the declaration. That was something that was very unique, as my lawyer, Ms. Bazelon, has told me, as well as her assistant, Charlie Nelson Kiever. They told me this is a rare feat. So that was the big thing that helped me to exoneration. But I want the listeners to know and everybody out there to know that, you know, upon me talking to Ms. Bowder, you know, the director of the Conviction Integrity Unit in Indianapolis, asking her that, I said, you know, Ms. Bowder, if we never would have had Detective Jones confessing, would I would have been exonerated? She said, hell yeah, you still would have been exonerated. It was so much evidence to your innocence. But Detective Jones, the guy that put me here, that's like the cherry on top for him to just go on and admit that he broke bad. And what he broke bad on, you know, for the listeners out there, he broke bad on, it was a confidential informant from the drug, the Indianapolis Police Department Drug Task Force, who had given their sponsor or detective a statement saying that they was with the shooter that committed the crime and a whole bunch of other, you know, then evidence that corroborated with other evidence that was already out there, like an eyewitness that was pointing at the same guy. So the detective withheld that. So it left me thinking, like, why the hell would you just run me up? And the only thing I can think of is because, you know, I was from, you know, Michigan, the Flint, Detroit area, and I just looked like a ripe target. But, hey, honors to Shannon Coleman, again, to my sister Valerie, to my brother Roderick Benson, to IDOC Watch in Indianapolis, to the Streets Don't Love You Back. You know, definitely, you know, they was a big part in the game on a lot of things. It's something we going to talk about a little later, as well as, you know, my attorneys, you know, Laura Bazelon and Charlie Nelson Kiever, and all the students that helped me. You know, without their help, I wouldn't have been exonerated the way I was.
My man, you know. And with that being said, 448, we're going to go right into this right here. You come home, boots on the ground, then all of a sudden you meet two of your mentors and you meet them for the very first time. How was that meeting, Rob and Lucinda?
Man, let me tell you, man. You know, first and foremost, you know, I got a lot of love for you, Rob, and I got a lot of love for Lucinda. You know, when I was inside, you know, a lot of people look at, like, when you're on the inside, like, people be crying for commissary money, you know, stuff like that. You know, let me get some money for my lawyer, you know. When I bumped into him, it was kind of a happenstance. I was advocating for one of my mentors on the inside, which was Christopher Naeem Trotter. He happened to be one of the two of the Pendleton two who have been severely mistreated and incarcerated over sentence for trying to save their friend. But I reached out to them on his behalf, and we hit it off, you know, real big while he was doing the show, you know, and I was inside. And, you know, we stayed in contact from there on, you know, and writing and things like that. They was very encouraging. They encouraged me to, you know, to speak out more. And we just continued to grow. They allowed my case to be platformed, you know, on their radio show, which brought, you know, a lot of attention to my case. But the thing, what they gave me the most was, you know, opportunity to grow. And they provided me, you know, with different tools, you know, mainly the life skills and intervention course. And this came about a little later. I first met you, Rob, in 2012, like 2012 on that radio show. And by 2016, like 4 years later, I received that intervention course. And I thought it was so profound. It really helped me. And what I started to do just on the inside, I started to share with other people. So I reached back to Rob and Lucinda, and I asked them, I said, can I teach this course on the inside? I got a platform on the inside. Because at that time, you know, I was a mentor on the inside. You know, I was a community leader, you know, on the inside. And it just was fitting for me to, you know, give this, you know, to the prison population where I was at Pendleton Correctional Facility in Indiana. And they gave me the green light. I did it. You know, I was able to graduate like over 400 prisoners, like on my own, hands on. And then, you know, it was a problem with the space, the classrooms that we had at the particular spot. The administration allowed this class to happen. So we had to go to a correspondence thing, but by that time, the word was out. People knew the streets don't love you back was serious because they knew I was serious, and, you know, I don't back nothing that's fugazi, and it ain't nothing fugazi about the streets don't love you back, nor my big brother, Rob, and my big sister, Lucinda. So it just really just spread it through the system. And, you know, I really, really thank y'all for that. So as opportunity and fate would have it, you know, I got exonerated. And, you know, I was able to go to Arizona, to Phoenix, to attend Innocence Network conference. It's a conference where the exonerees and the people that help exonerees, you know, to justice all meet up in this one place. It was very extraordinary. So this is like 2 weeks after I've been out of prison. You know, I then flew down here. And so it happened, you know, I know that Rob and Lucinda are in Maricopa. We had an ongoing relationship. When I told him that, he's like, man, for sure. Man, you got to come through, you know. You got to come check out my house. You know, I'm going to come up to the conference. So when I got down there, you know, I knocked out the business I had at the conference, and later on that night, you know, I drove out to Maricopa, Arizona, and I met Rob, Lucinda, and they had a friend, and you know, it was a full circle moment, you know, to see, you know, Rob and Lucinda, you know, sitting before my face. I'm in their driveway, you know, I'm in their house, I'm sitting in their living room, you know. I'm eating Lucinda cookies. He had, like, some good cookies. I didn't want to eat up all the cookies, but they was, like, pretty good. And we was sitting there, you know, just kicking it. You know, we got a chance to hug, you know, and Rob introduced me to a lot of great people, you know, when I was there. And, it was a big deal for me, Rob. You know, we never talked about this, but for real, man, it was a full circle moment for me, man. You know, it's rare that you bump into people who – all the masses that they bring. You know, I went to their house. He got a whole garage full of the Streets Don't Love You Back, you know, life skill courses and books. He got a whole room dedicated, man, to the correspondence that he received, you know, from guys on the inside, you know, everything just neatly organized, you know, and he to the beat and he ready to go. And I was like, wow. So for me meeting y'all and seeing that, it was a level of accountability that happened, because to see you living out what you're saying, you know, I heard it, you know, we wrote, but to see it full circle, I knew I couldn't be playing out here, you know, and they kind of helped me set the tone, you know, moving forward, man. So that said, you know, hey, we should give a big round of applause and appreciation to Rob Boyd and Lucinda Boyd, you know, a power couple that's doing their thing to uplift the community, man. And that's number love, right? That's real love, man. Hey, love to y'all, man. God bless y'all, man, for the stuff that you do. Continue to do it. You know, I'm out here. I'm an ally now, man, you know. So please continue to do it, man. You know, I'm an ally in that fight. And we're going to continue to grow and be better, you know, friends and family.
Appreciate that, man. And last but not least, before we let you go, let the world know about how you became part of the Trapped in the Hood documentary series.
Oh, yeah, the Trapped in the Hood, you know, documentary series. You know, Rob, he told me about it. And, you know, nobody really knew when I would get out. You know, everything was looming. And it was like, it was epic. But I was able to come out. When we came out, you know, I came out to visit them and just kick it with them. And, you know, Rob, you know, mentioned the series. I'm like, man, can I get in on the series? He didn't really, he was like, you know, he didn't, you know, he had to schedule something, but he, you know, he made a way for me. So we just kind of, you know, just went at it, you know, like impromptu. We went at it. We was right there because, you know, we was in the same place at the same time. Like, it was so surreal. So we sat down and we did that, man. And I really liked what came out because it was real. It was raw. You know, I let people, you know, see me vulnerable. You know, what people don't realize, vulnerability is the strength. You know, you got to be sincere and be authentic in this world. You know, that's real strength. And I was able to do that because I was around none but love, you know. So I appreciate y'all for that.
Hey, we appreciate it, man. And then with Leon being on Trapped in the Hood episode 9, his episode so far, me and my queen Lucinda put it in the film festival circuit throughout the world. That episode has won 21 film festivals so far throughout
what?
The whole world, you know. So we thanking God for that right there. And our first episode, Trapped in the Hood, episode 1, that has my homeboy, White Boy Rick, on there. Rick did that episode when he was still in prison. Rick served 32 years. And that episode alone has won 105 awards for Trapped in the Hood, episode 1. So it's been amazing. Amazing journey with Trapped in Hood documentary series. We have other series available as well, 1 through 7. And Leon is number 9. And then Papa Snoop, he's episode 8. And we also have our son, Ruben, on an episode as well. So it's a lot going on. And at the end of the day, it's just about educating against gangs, drugs, violence, and abuse, and making better choices in your life, you know, and always seeking the Creator for more wisdom and more understanding to keep your life going. So without further ado, any shout-outs you would like to give, Leon?
Hey, definitely. I like for your listeners, you know, I want to thank y'all for supporting The Streets Don't Love You Back, for supporting me and supporting anything that's real, you know, the truth. That said, you know, hit me on Instagram, lbentley448, ELBETLY 448. Follow me on Facebook, Lee Benson, or Free Leon Benson cause page. I also want to let everybody know that I got a new album finna come out. You already know. Where you in the world, you're going to see somebody that's exonerated, that's going to get a story. And that album is Innocent Born Guilty. It's going to drop on all platforms June 26th, right, when I drop the video for Innocence. Check it out. Also, it's a podcast with the entire details of my case, Suspects, on Amazon. That's coming out, too, on June 26th. We doing big things. You know, hey, I hit the ground running because I was in there doing my job, right? I was sitting looking at the world and writing down my notes and getting ready for you. Ain't play. All you little phony rappers out there, you fake trap rappers, you fake OGs, all that. I'm standing on all y'all. So just be on the lookout. Don't get scared now, because you dig, LB is home, and I'm finna stand on all you suckers, right? Sucker MCs, right? So another thing that's going on in Philly at Eastern Penitentiary on June 30th, your boy got a concert, right? Hey, if you in the Philly area, June 30th, man, come out to Eastern Penitentiary, a world-renowned famous prison that was shut down. It's only fitting for me to go there just to show you my liberation, man, through my lyrics. And it's going to be a special thing. I got another show in NYC, right, July the 1st. So if you're in the NYC area, I need you to come out. You know, go check out my social media, my website, and you will see, you know, how you can purchase tickets and other things you can do. So for right now, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing y'all. Because you don't get this situation every day, man. We get to come back. I get to show you this strength, right, and let you know in real time, truth never dies. Because I'm right here talking to you as a free man. Hey, thanks to Lucinda, the Streets Don't Love You Back, and everybody that's listening, man. Love to y'all. Hallelujah.
My main man, with that being said, get with our boy Leon, man. He out here. He doing his thing. One love. We gave him his flowers while he's still living, man. Peace, don't love you back. Peace and love.